I was born in Los Angeles, California, in a suburb called La Puente. And that is next to the City of Industry, for those of you who need clarification, off the 605 freeway. And so I grew up about 20 miles east of downtown Los Angeles. So I guess effectively it is East LA, although it's beyond what is known as that. Mainly Mexican immigrant suburb, Chicano, as if you will. It was a new suburban place when my parents moved there from downtown Los Angeles. And I was the last of three children, two older sisters. So I grew up amongst the Mattel factory and the Kearns tomato and jam factories, and you could see two different drive-in movies from the roof of my house. So I was always well informed in the cinema, even though I didn't know have the sound. I grew up with my parents are both second generation Mexican-American, and I grew up in Los Angeles in the 40s and 50s of first generation Mexican-American parents. And so my great-grandparents are from Mexico and Arizona and Mexico City, that is. And in the ones from Arizona are actually Apache. So I grew up, went to school, and I was fortunate to have some very rock and roll-y neighbors. You know, I had a garage band that played in the garage, like when I was like in junior high, like a few doors down from me. And I really loved that because I grew up listening to music. My parents had a really large family. So at the weekends were all about parties and all about family gatherings. And all of my uncles all played guitar, and there was a lot of singing and playing guitar, Mexican music, more ranchero style music. And that was like the thing. It was party music weekend all weekend long, and all the kids would get together and hang out together and defy our parents doing trickster things. And also then growing up, and I had two older sisters who were very into music as well. And so I grew up hearing everything from the Beatles and Rolling Stones from a very small child to things in the neighborhood, you know, a lot of the lowrider music, doo-wop oldies, a lot of soul and funk music, a lot of Santana and Jimi Hendrix and Black Sabbath and, you know, and that was just the sounds that drifted in and out of my head as I was growing up. And then I befriended my garage band friends down the street. They were called Hog Wild. And they did different kinds of cover versions. They kind of rocked out some, and then they were sometimes a wedding band, and so they would do like Chicago cover versions and things like that. But then they branched out into things like David Bowie and things like they had interest in, like, this was the first time I heard of like Mott the Hoople and different like 70s British glam era songs. And there was another neighbor of mine who was an artist, like underground kind of painter and cartoonist. And I seemed to always like, they were like my older sister's age, but somehow I befriended them. And they introduced me to more underground things like comics, furry freak brothers, R. Crumb comics, and Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. And that was kind of my growing up, you know, that was my introduction to the underground. They were the first ones who took me to see a John Waters movie, to see Pink Flamingos when it came out, and I must have been really young. And I don't know how I got in, but So I was not, I was early, no stranger. Early on, I was no stranger to things underground. And that's what interested me. And that's, and then I, from that, I started becoming a big magazine hound, a big music magazine hound, and would read Cream magazine and Roxine magazine and different things. And there I found out about New York City rock. And so I, from these magazines, I just saw really a lifestyle and people. I thought, God, this is like where I really should be. And I probably was like 13 or 14 years old. And I was like, I really have to move to New York City. You know, that's where it's all happening. And that's where what I'm interested in is. So I was reading about Lou Reed, this came from like the glam thing, Iggy Pop hanging out at Max's Kansas City with Lou Reed and David Bowie. And then from that, you learned about the New York Dolls. And from that, you learned about, as the years kind of creeped by, you learned about the emerging punk scene and CBG. I remember reading about the first things about CBGBs and television and Patti Smith playing there. And, was very intrigued, and the Ramones. And then, by the time I was already an old bag in 1975, Patti Smith's album came out when I was 15 years old, and I bought the Horses album, and I really like flipped out, that this is, kind of my sound and my thing, something everything I dreamed about, because I've been reading about it for so long that I it kind of was exactly the way I envisioned it, and even better. And and I was a rock fan, and I was really young, like 14, like 15, 16, and I started going to concerts a lot. And the Ramones, then the Ramones album came out, then I really flipped out. I was never quite the same. I mean, I had already gone out to concerts and seen like the New York Dolls a bunch of times, and whoever came through, sensational Alex Harvey band. I saw just everyone. And and so that was kind of it. I was never quite the same after that. And so that was kind of my teenage lineage. And then the whole, I was getting older, and I was going out more and starting to get drunk and hang out more and make friends with the people who are also fans of this music. And I was hanging around a lot with this friends of mine, Trudy, and these people who ran a fanzine called Backdoor Man, Fast Freddy, and Don Waller, and T.D. Faye. And that was, I was already really, really into the underground, and really influenced by these people. And they had, basically a really, it was like pre-punk, but it was like a hard view of rock music, a really raw view, and juvenile delinquency and different interesting things to teenagers. And there was no real big scene to support it at the time. There was before the Sex Pistols or whatever happened at the punk explosion. But it was the first place I heard about, like, remember they had ads to mail away for the Para Ubu 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, or the first television single of Little Johnny Jewel on Ork. And that's, where I learned about all of this stuff. And then the big punk explosion, like the post Ramones, the English thing happened, and there started to be local groups, and a lot of concerts have turned into something that was just really a whole big scene. So I became such a big fan. Like I said, like, I really became hysterical when the Ramones album came out, because that, even more than anything, like, really was something different. I had heard the Stooges or Velvet Underground or New York Dolls even, but the Ramones were faster, funnier, and just the energy was incredible to me as a teenage kid. And I went to see them play a lot of the times, and I was so enamored with them, I started a fan club for them, which was basically a stapled together 3-page newsletter. And I went to the shows and met people and took people's addresses and just had them send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. And I remember this older kind of like hippie-ish school teacher type guy, like, let me use his P.O. box. And it was like weird. It was a really strange, weird community. It was before punk was like kind of cool or trendy or anything. So it was all these disparate people, like that photographer, Jenny Lenz. And like, it was just like strange people looking for something new. And it was a crazy, crazy, you know, and kids and, you know, it was kind of all kinds of like strange Mad Magazine picture of people. Around that very time, there was already bands. And like I said, that they're already like the Backdoor Man fanzine, you know, was supporting. There were bands that kind of were very raw rock and roll, kind of Detroit style rock, you know, was the pre-punk thing. You know, there were bands like the Motels, who kind of became something different at first. They were a bit raw, and there was a band called The Dogs, and I think the Imperial Dogs. There was two dogs, and that was Don Waller's band, and they were like hard edge, kind of like Stooges-y MC5 sort of thing. The New York influence, you know, was a new thing than that. It was a newer attitude, and it was a newer feeling, and it was a very jet propelled. Okay, so yeah, they started right away. You know, then the English punk invasion. You know, the Sex Pistols happened, the Clash, and actually the first bands that came to the Los Angeles area were like, I think the Damned were the very first. You know, we'd had Blondie and like a lot of American bands, and Devo and Para Ubu and a bunch of people had played in television. But then the English bands started coming, like the Damned and the Jam, I think, were the first ones. And everyone turned out in force and threw parties. And it was crazy, crazy, crazy. And, you know, and this really informed and influenced a lot of the bands, you know, the Germs for sure, the Germs, the Bags, the Weirdos, the Screamers, and those were the main, you know, the main first bands, the Zeros, and I'm sure a few more, you know, and they just kind of came out of nowhere. It all came out of who knows where they came from, and they started playing as support to these bands, and then a kind of scene arose around that, like with the Mask Club, and which was a, you know, a Hollywood basement. I think it was rehearsal studio space, and this guy Brendan Mullen, you know, took it over and started hosting these punk shows, and then a million more bands started cropping up. Some bad, some good, but it was a scene. It created a complete scene of, you know, people. And then the first it was like the hipster glam leftovers mixed with the hard rock fans. And then it became, you know, more suburban, more kids started coming from out of the woodwork, and things like Slash Magazine started, Lobotomy Magazine, and the San Francisco scene, you know, was closely, although rivals, it was also happening, you know. And then there was a lot of stuff coming out of, like, the art school kind of thing, like, everywhere. Well, I was a really big fan of the Screamers, and I also, since I had fanzine-making skills, I made their newsletter. I was drafted to make their newsletter. And I actually lived in, I made a room inside a big walk-in closet in their house. I had a typewriter in there, and I would diligently type out my fanzine newsletters. I was like kind of the Rona Barrett of the punk scene at the time. And I knew all the inside dish on everything. But the Screamers were truly a great band. You know, there's very little bit very little documentation of, and but we're a huge live band and big influence in Los Angeles. And if for nothing else, is they looked amazing, and that they had an original approach, which was to not have guitars, you know, before Chicks on Speed. They had, didn't have guitars, and they were like kind of electroshock treatment put to, you know, and they were like showmen and really, just really great, you know, and wrote great songs and, you know, and it was an explosion. It like went into every area. It went from like, you know, dorky suburban kids to street people to bad kids to, art students to the very chic Fiorucci crowd, you know, fashion. It was just, and there's some crazy explosion that happened. So around this time, I like, you know, was offered my walk-in closet space at the Screamer's house for a nominal fee, and so I moved in with them, and that was, you know, probably 1977. Okay, so I was in high school, and I was really, you know, smart kid, and I was really bored, and I like had really good grades, and so I took a GED test and got out early, and my parents sponsored me as a graduation present, sponsored me a trip with the school was taking a trip to Europe, and one of the stops was London and Paris and Switzerland and I think Rome, and I was like, that's, you know, I'll finish school if you give me this trip. And they were like, okay. And so I went on this trip, and of course I split off from the school team, and I had like one friend, this girl, and we split off and like just went to concerts the whole time and sought out punk rock record stores in Paris and in London. And yeah, I went to this club, the Vortex Club, and I saw the Slits play, and I saw just different bands, and the Clash were hanging out, and Susie, and it was all very, very, very exciting. You know, I was like 17, you know, I was probably not even 18 yet. And you know, I got a punk rock haircut and came back to New York at the time, and I saw the Dead Boys and the Heartbreakers, and went to CBGB's, and you know, I went back to LA quite informed about what was going on. And actually, it was at that time, you know, everything started getting like bigger and bigger. There were concerts every night to go to. There was The Mask to hang out to, I think, most nights. And some nights it would be empty, some nights it would be full. And it kind of became a very coherent rock scene going on there, and you know, a lot of craziness and experimentation with drugs and sexual things, and you know, and just a lot of bands, like some doing really off the wall stuff and stuff that was stupid and retarded, and then stuff that was really brilliant and great. And you know, there was, you know, the Bags were really a good band. They were like very traditional kind of punk. The girl singer, this girl Alice Bag, was really like beautiful and like totally fire, you know. She was totally like aggressive and fiery, and they were really great and one of the real popular bands. And you know, and that was the start of all of that, you know. It was a kind of a very exciting time. It was kind of, actually, then I came back to LA, then I went back to New York. I decided I had to investigate New York some more. And actually, a group of LA punks got Greyhound bus tickets and some drugs, and took a bus trip. I think it was like four of us: me, Trudy, Helen Killer, and my friend Rod Donahue, and Mary Ratt, who was a big Richard Hell fan. She was going to go to New York and marry Richard Hell. And so we went to New York, and I had already met Bradley Field from Teenage Jesus and Christian Hoffman, the Mumps, had been in New York and stayed there to record and played a lot and were a big hit in Los Angeles. And they, it said, they very wrongly invited me to come stay with them. They didn't, not thinking probably that I would show up. But then I called them and said, I'm coming to New York, can I stay with you? And they said, yes. Okay, so I went and ended up staying with Bradley and his roommate, Lydia Lunch, who I didn't know at the time. And she had a, they were in their band, Teenage Jesus, and she had an offshoot band called Beirut Slump, who made one single and very few live performances, harrowing live performances, with the lead singer, Bobby Berkowitz. And actually, I stayed there for like a good month. And I think for the first 3 weeks, me and Lydia didn't say a word to each other. And then finally, we ended up talking, and she said, I like you a lot because you are such a worse crab than I am. And so that was the start of my relationship with Lydia, which goes on to this day. And I just remember that whole time, like around there, there was like, it was a, you know, Lower East Side was a completely different place then. It was like, it looked like a bomb had hit it. There were many abandoned buildings, rubble in lots everywhere, you know, prostitutes at the my favorite place, the Restaurant Fried Chicken, and like a lot of like hookers there hanging out at night, and you know, and they liked the punk rock kids, the girl, because the girls dressed like hookers, and you know, we had crazy, ooh, you got the blue hair, and like, you know, and you know, and that was going on. That's when I was really introduced to like the Cramps. I saw the Cramps then, and I saw the Contortions, Teenage Jesus, and I made friends with a lot of the kids that were around. You know, there was like a lot of bands you don't hear about, like Little Annie and the Asexuals and the Student Teachers. And, you know, there was it was just like, you know, very fertile time. And I ended up going back to Los Angeles, and that's actually when I met Jeffrey Lee Pierce.